Welcome to Life Quest Liberty, live in-depth conversations with today's top writers, editors, and spiritual leaders concerning religious freedom around the world. On today's broadcast, we'll examine local and international factors that may be impacting your right to worship and obey God as your conscience dictates. I'm your Life Quest Liberty host, Charles Mills. What we need today are some good old-fashioned champions to show us how to deal with the religious liberty crisis we see developing around the world. Well, they exist, at least in history, and Lincoln Steed, editor of Liberty Magazine, is here with us to identify those who were and those who were definitely not. Lincoln, the time is yours.
Yeah, well, this topic came to my mind recently while I was watching and listening to a YouTube about Christopher Columbus, who has come to prominence again lately as the ostensible discoverer of the New World, and that's been challenged a little by some. And what's easily challenged is the aftermath. He brought death and destruction and a form of religion that makes the hair on the back of my head raise up when I read about it, the early conquest by the Spanish in particular. But there's something that program brought out that is worth remembering. There was a reason that Christopher Columbus imagined on a round world, which he believed in, as many others. It wasn't just he was the only one that thought it was round and everyone else thought it was flat. There was, you know, there's people in our age that think the world's flat.
Absolutely, yes.
You can find them online.
Yes.
And so even though the scientists already had figured out it was round, there were other sailors included, the superstitious, that sort of feared they'd fall off the end. But he needed to get to India, the Spice Islands, or the land of spice, for a very simple and religious reason. Because only a few decades before his voyage, in 1453, Constantinople, the capital of New Rome, and the Christian holdout in the Middle East had collapsed, overrun by the Muslims. And they had interrupted the land trade lines to Europe from the whole East. You know, there was a trade problem in Europe. They were cut off. And if you know anything about the general sanitation conditions, lack of running water, lack of toilets, lack of bathing, and so on. Without spice and perfumes, people would stink too bad to deal with, and the food would be inedible in Europe. It's worth remembering about European history. While we think we're the elite of the world, at this time, Europe was pretty much a backwater of dirty, unsanitary conditions. So they needed these spices. So as he headed off to what he thought was India, he had a religious zealotry at work. There's no question. And further, like many in his era, following the fall of Constantinople, which would be pretty much the same as Israel being overrun and destroyed in our day, he and his peers were convinced this was the end of the world, that they were living in the end days. Christopher Columbus had written things of an apocalyptic nature. He was deeply religious, of course, deeply ambitious too. And even on his way to the New World, he saw things. And we know when he arrived there, the killing began. What I want to bring out is that his voyage was under the sponsorship of champions of faith, the leaders of Spain, Ferdinand and Isabella. But they're really known for something even far more pernicious than the beginning of the killing in the New World. Ferdinand and Isabella, defenders of the faith, were characterized by beginning the Spanish Inquisition, which continued, ironically, until 1492 in Spain and was picked up in the New World and continued until about 1800 and something, ironically, in Peru.
Was Columbus aware of this when he set out? Was Columbus aware of the full depth of what was going on, or was he just...
The Inquisition, of course.
He was, okay.
All right. Inquisition had run from 718. That's a long time.
Yes,
700 years.
Yes.
And it was reaching its peak because the Reconquista of Spain, the reconquest from the Moorish Muslim occupation, was reaching its peak, and it had moved beyond persecuting Muslims to persecuting Jews. That was the period when the Jews were deeply persecuted and finally expelled from Spain unless they converted to Christianity. So Ferdinand and Isabella were hard-bitten persecutorial leaders, champions of faith.
Oh, no.
we can go a little bit further on, moving to England this time, the time of the Reformation. Henry VIII, you know, he's maligned deeply by the Catholic historians in particular, and they try to make him out just to be a libertine and a guy that just wanted to be head of a church and didn't know about religion. The facts are that Henry VIII was deeply religious, not very spiritual, but when Martin Luther posted his 95 Theses, Henry VIII wrote a theological treatise in opposition to him, where he upheld the sacraments of the Catholic Church. And he was named by the Pope a defender of the faith.
Why is it that history always has defenders of the faith being the faith of Jesus, the loving, peaceful faith of Jesus? Defenders or champions of the faith seem to be murderous thugs who go about killing people if they don't obey exactly the way that they want them to obey. Where did that come about?
Well, I'm trying to get a theme that we had in another program earlier, the idea that if you look to a political leader to defend your faith, they will introduce almost typically a perversion of true spirituality. And the classic defender of the faith that set things on a crazy path for hundreds and hundreds of years was the Emperor Constantine. Mm-hmm. Historians are divided over what really happened and caused this warlike emperor who was battling for control of the empire, what caused him to cast his lot in with Christianity. You know, he said that at the Battle of Milvian Bridge, which cemented his singular rule over Rome, that he'd seen a cross in the sky and was told that by this sign you will conquer. Too convenient. I mean, it might have happened, but it appears to be a political convenience.
Yeah,
but there's no question that he backed off on the sporadic persecution of Christianity by Rome, which correctly had seen it as a competition for the emperor worship and the worship of the state. And I hope that resonates even in the United States. There's always the problem that patriotism or a worship of the mechanism that guides our daily lives can become a competitor to true spiritual faith. And Constantine became the champion of Christianity. There was an edict of toleration, quickly followed by his open espousal of Christianity, although he was apparently not baptized till the end of his life. But as champion of Christianity, he then decided that he wanted a Christianity that was definable on his own limits. So he called Council of Nicaea and dictated to the leaders, you need to decide what's orthodox. Once you decide it, then I will defend orthodoxy.
My.
And too few people quite understand how that skewed Christianity in many ways that, of course, then were integrated into the developing Roman Catholic Church, which itself became a political power and at times a persecuting power.
Lincoln, as you tell these stories and as you pull back the screen to give us a peek into history, it just seems to me that there always have been and there are today people who are seeing crosses in the sky. I am called of God to do this. There's a command from heaven for me to be who I am and do what I do. How can champions of faith, and we all want to be champions of faith, we want to champion faith as God and Jesus demonstrated it to us, how can we tell the difference between a champion of faith who saw a cross in the sky to a champion of faith who has a cross in his or her heart?
Well, I think an easy way to avoid that is don't follow earthly champions. Follow Christ. Follow a model. And as the Bible says, and I think a hymn repeats, you know, deeds of love and mercy.
Yes.
Not, you know, daring do of a political sort that passes for religion. And it's worth remembering that rulers as diverse as Adolf Hitler, who was, I don't think by any definition, a good practicing Christian, but for expediency early on, he proclaimed boldly that National Socialism was based on Christianity and fully supported it, and then made an alliance with the Roman Catholic Church and de facto alliances with Lutheranism and a number of other groups to co-opt them to what turned out to be a murderous national adventure. And some people saw it, but people would have been inoculated against that if they weren't following. I read an editorial once, you know, the man on the white horse.
Yes, yes.
It's true in Revelation it speaks of a man on the white horse, but that's the man, capital M.
Yes.
Political leaders who claim to have a religious mandate are always dangerous. And, you know, I hope and pray that our present president resists this, because I don't know if he was joking, but he repeated what's said of him recently. He said, "I'm the promised one." Mm. Well, the promises of political leaders are usually negatively expressed in the Bible, not positively.
That's true.
You know, Cyrus accepted, and of course there's been some effort to connect him with Cyrus. I wouldn't even say that Cyrus the Great was a godly man. It's just that his enactments led the way for the rebuilding of Jerusalem. But generally speaking, political leaders who have a religious mandate end up persecuting and killing many people of faith. Not a good model to follow.
You know, you have said on a number of occasions, Lincoln, that the Bible indicates, "By their fruits we shall know them." Aren't we guilty these days of ignoring the fruits and just going for the tree, no matter what fruit happens to be dropping on the ground around it?
Well, we're not looking at practical Christianity so much as public morality.
Yeah.
And, you know, like public prayers, it can be sanctimonious, process-oriented, and not looking at the deeper things that was all to do with the message of Jesus, who was challenging a calcified religion of his day and trying to bring again the true love of God and love of man. It's desperately needed today everywhere, but particularly in the United States, a country that tends toward religious activism, which is a good thing, and equally tends toward sanctimony and double dealing in religious matters. And at this time, when we're dealing with religious threats, religio-political threats all around the world, we need to have a clear idea what it is to be a God-fearing, spiritually-based citizen in this country, and rather than a follower of a guy that's waving a white flag, but maybe on the other side there could be dark symbols.
Whether you want to be a champion of faith or you want to follow a champion of faith, I hear you saying, pay attention to the fruits, right?
You're right. And Fox's Book of Martyrs, a hardly read book anymore, tells many stories of champions of faith. Not all of them were martyred in that book, they were.
Yes.
But very often, to stand for true faith puts you at odds with the world and at odds with political ambition and at odds with the majority thought. Even the majority of those who claim to be religious.
Lincoln Steed, editor of Liberty Magazine. LibertyMagazine.org is the website. Check it out, listener. Lots of good resources there. The magazine is there, of course. Articles to read and blogs to look at and programs to hear and watch. All Lincoln Steed's editorials are there. Lots of good stuff. LibertyMagazine.org. Lincoln, thank you so much for being with us today. Appreciate it.
Always a pleasure.
And listener, until next time, this is Charles Mills along with Lincoln Steed, inviting you to rest in the freedom of God's love. Goodbye, everyone. If you'd like more information about LifeQuest Liberty, call 443-391-7258 or email us through our website at libertymagazine.org. Join us again next week at this same time as we examine more of the threats and challenges facing your religious freedom. May God keep the flames of liberty burning in your heart today.